In this episode of the PMR Toolkit, Dr. Linda Hill, longtime director of the Preventive Medicine Residency Program at the University of California at San Diego, shares her insight and experience on securing program funding. PMR programs face many funding challenges, from limited access to Medicare and Medicaid GME funding to the need to fund the tuition for a master's in public health. Dr. Hill shares some of the ways her program has overcome these challenges and helpful advice for new directors as they explore diverse funding mechanisms for their residency. So in this session of the PMR Toolkit podcast, we'll be talking about a topic of paramount importance to many residency programs, and that is how to fund the residency program, covering everything from funding resident salaries to the MPH, some of the unique challenges faced by preventive medicine residencies, as well as some of the unique funding opportunities and angles that they have to approach these challenges. I'm joined by Dr. Linda Hill, who's the residency program director at the University of California, San Diego. Thank you, Dr. Hill, for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. So just one small correction. After 30 years, I'm no longer the program director, but I'm now assistant dean of the School of Public Health, and Dr. Jill Wallen is the program director. I mean, I continue to stay very involved with the residency, but I want to let you know that I've passed on the torch, trying to avoid Queen Elizabeth syndrome.
Well, congratulations on the new position and stepping up into that. So starting off, we know funding a residency program is not just funding a residency program. There's so many different components that you have to fund, and they have to come from many different sources. So not only are you needing to fund residency salaries, you're probably also needing to think about faculty salary, MPH tuition, and so much more. So can you break down the components that someone looking to start a residency program or a new director taking on an existing program needs to be aware of and have an idea for how they'll support it?
Sure. I think you laid it out very well, that you definitely need stipends and benefits for the residents. And the reason that I stress and benefits is that HRSA funding, which we're going to talk about soon, it doesn't traditionally include benefits in the allowable expenses. So then you need a separate source of funding for the benefits. And then I think the very least that people need is funding for the program director. And in my opinion, you actually need funding for core faculty. At UCSD, we had traditionally been funding between 2 and 4 faculty, and these last 5 years, we funded directly for faculty to be active participants in the residency. And then when we got the maternal health grant from HRSA, we were able to add funding directly to faculty for maternal health, additional maternal health. I think this is really crucial. Without a core dedicated number of program faculty to mentor the residents and administer the grant, then you're shortchanged. So in addition to that, I think you definitely need a program coordinator. And in my opinion, that program coordinator should be 100%. I know that not all of the programs can afford that, but there's no doubt in my mind that my program coordinator is very busy.
So most of the programs are based in university and medical schools. So aside from obviously you as the program director having a large role in figuring out funding for the program, who else at the institutions, is if there's a GME office, if there's a financial aid office, who do you need to know and how can they help you prepare the program to get funded and sustain funding year over year?
Yeah. I think most of us who are in academic health centers report to the GME office, and there's somebody called a DIO, the designated institution official, who has a very close relationship with ACGME. That DIO has a committee called the GME committee and a GME staffer who job it is to anticipate the needs of ACGME and keep all the programs in line. they prefer to do internal corrections rather than wait for AAC GME to come in and do external corrections. So I would consider that your GME office is your friend. You want them to be guiding you on how to follow all of the guidelines that are published by our RRC that list the program requirements. So in addition to the residency specific requirements, I think everybody knows there's core requirements, sort of general standardized requirements for running GME programs around, for example, supervision and evaluation and duty hours. Those are all general requirements. And what we've done is taken that list of preventive medicine requirements and operationalized it into a checklist so that we know that we're in compliance with every single line of that document. But your DIO and the DIO head staff person can also help in that regard.
Mm-hmm. And do they play a role in helping secure funding, like through institutional sources, or do they maintain relationships with donors or grantors or federal and state local funders, or is that mostly up to the residency director to maintain those relationships?
Yeah. So that's a complicated question, but let me answer it as best I can. Medicare GME has a provision, CMS dollars that go to GME allow for preventive medicine residents to be included in that funding. And in fact, there's a specific sentence in there that says, and this is unusual for residencies, that even if this is a second residency, if it's preventive medicine, you are allowed to use GME dollars, whereas usually if it's a second residency, you're not. So why isn't that happening? That's not happening because medical centers across the country, for the most part, are choosing not to share their capped GME dollars with preventive medicine. And they're choosing instead to fund programs that will provide the hospital care that keeps the medical center going. But there's nothing that keeps them from doing that. So after our program specifically had been 30 years old and had received zero funding from our medical center, they graciously allowed us to have one GME slot for a new resident starting every other year. So one slot a year, but one's the PGY2 and PGY3 year of a given resident. I mean, for us, that's only 10% of our need. Not enough to run a program. And then after 30 years, they decided to include us in the money that they give all other residencies, which is approximately 10% of a program director and 50% of a program coordinator. So one thing you can check if you're a residency director across the country is to go to the GME office and say, you know, we're a program just like all your other programs, and this is what we bring to the institution and to the community. And can you find it in your heart to share those GME stipends? And by the way, we'd like to be included in the stipends that you give the PD and the PC.
So you know that the CMS GME funding, you know, unfortunately, is capped at the federal level, and that it sounds like programs tend to invest in, I don't want to say that PMR programs can't be revenue drivers, or if not revenue drivers, then certainly cost savers and efficiency increasers for the hospitals and health systems, but not the most obvious one-to-one driver for them, so that their GME funding tends to go elsewhere. But there is the one source of protected federal funding that is exclusively for PMR programs, and that's there's funding through grants through HRSA. So could you talk a bit more about the HRSA grant process and what's available there at the federal level and what that process is like?
Yes. And as we leave GME funding, CMS funding, I should say, I think we're getting away from your DIO GME office institutional support and you're on your own. In my experience, while the DIO is marginally helpful in trying to get the CMS dollars as little as they are, they aren't able to either understand or help with getting the funding from the many other sources that are out there, and I can talk about them. HRSA's the best source, I think, because like pediatrics, we're left out for the most part, as we've discussed, from CMS dollars. So like pediatrics, we're looking for another federal source of funding to support our residency. And HRSA has kindly, since 1985, put out an RFA, as you know, to fund PrevMed residencies. And generally, the funding is from 3 to 5 years. It's a competitive application. And unfortunately, they're just funding a fraction of the programs with these dollars. Now, they did also come out with another grant for maternal health training. The restrictions for that training are pretty severe in that the applicant must have completed a primary care residency in another have already completed a primary care residency and be interested in maternal health and not have a J-1 visa, and that residency can't have been in an ACGMEI program. So they put a lot of restrictions on it. Nonetheless, we're very grateful to have that funding. We think that maternal disparities are an important problem.
Yeah.
Whether that will ever be repeated again, I don't know. That was 5 years of funding. But the main HRSA funding, I know that ACPM is working hard to try to increase that line item. And that would be incredibly helpful to try to fund a greater percentage of the programs across the country.
So you mentioned that your program is funded through, right, you have a little bit of money from HRSA, a little bit from CMS GME, but it sounds like the majority of the funding maybe comes from a whole constellation of different sources. So could you share what some of those sources are? Are they state funders? Are they foundations? I know a lot of programs receive funding through the Veterans Administration. So kind of what does your funding universe look like? And, you know, what have you learned in your years as a program director about patching together that funding that, while not optimal, you can share with, you know, other programs?
So just to be clear, I think the money that we get from HRSA, and now that especially this brief period of time when we have two HRSA grants, one general and one maternal health, that's been a fabulous source of stability. I've always viewed the HRSA money as the necessary core for a PrevMed residency. Without that base, I think it's really hard. And I'm going to talk about other sources of funding because I think I've tried all of them. But just wanted to say again that I consider that HRSA funding just so important. Having that stability for whatever it is, 3 to 5 years, and that funds some stipends and part of the faculty has been absolutely crucial so that you can then build on that. So let's go down the list I made of other sources of funding. For a while, American Cancer Society, as an example of a nonprofit, and in fact, that was from 1995 until just this year when the last grant money ran out. American Cancer Society was a wonderful source of funding. They were funding several programs every year, and that funding was for 4 years, and we could admit 3 residents who were interested in cancer control and prevention. So I would be thrilled if American Cancer Society could see their way to doing that again. I think it's probably worth looking at other specialty society type agencies such as American Heart Association, for example, and saying that having PrevMed residents who are interested in the prevention of heart disease, the prevention of cancer, the prevention of neurologic disease, whatever it is, lung disease, that would be a really good way to go forward. But for now, that is no longer available. From a more agency point of view, and then we can get a little bit more specific. From an agency point of view, I think the VA has been a good source of funding for many programs. It happens that my VA has not been supportive of preventive medicine, and I think it's just very individual in terms of the gatekeeper for San Diego. But in general, I would say that I've heard over the years, Loma Linda being one example, that the VA has been a good training. It's been a win-win situation, and they've provided, you know, needed services for the VA as well. So I'm all in favor of that. I'm trying to work with your local VA. Your local county is another potential source of funding. I've had funding from the county for many, many years, but it's very, very small. It's like 2% of my residency budget. So 2% means I only have to find 98% somewhere else. So I'm grateful. Mm-hmm. And the county is interested in supporting the program, I think, because we work with them on their initiatives, help them with data analysis. During COVID, the residents were absolutely essential in the COVID response. And our residents go on to work in the county public health department. So I think that's why they support our 2%. Some programs who work at the state level across the country, of course, have the opportunity for state public health support. I've not had that, but again, I want to be kind of comprehensive and say that some programs, such as our California Department of Public Health, has a small residency in Sacramento, and they get stipends for their residents, and others have as well. Those are the main kind of agency sources of funding that are generalizable. Occasionally, we've had money come from, as you recall, during Zika, the height of Zika, money from the CDC to ACPM to have residents help with the Zika response. So this is, again, agency money. ACPM was really crucial in getting that to the programs. So for us, what that meant was one of our residents was deployed to American Samoa and was like a one physician Zika machine doing prevention and mitigation under the direction of the CDC. So these are kind of, you know, one-off kinds of projects, but still kind of coming from that federal agency. So I wanted to talk about how to get even more creative. So the first way to get more creative is to find agencies that are in need of physicians for a service. And over the years, I've used many of these agencies: Student Health Service, Qualified Health Centers, community service projects, where our residents are training, but they're also giving back to that agency, and that agency is willing to pay us for that. So when I look back over the 40 years of our residency, for 20 years or more, student health, we were actually housed by San Diego State University Student Health, and had all residents rotating at least some of the time in student health, for which they offset some of the residents' stipend. Equally, over the years, we've had a variety of FQHCs, And I know this is going to sound crazy, but in the wild 80s and 90s, our residents were so good that they're still good. It's just the times have changed. Mm-hmm. The FQHCs asked our residents to serve as medical director while they were residents.
Oh, wow.
And at one time, I had 6 residents and, you know, immediate, like early grads serving as medical directors around the county. So then we got their stipends covered for that service. I've been working for many years with asylum seekers and refugees mm-hmm. and provide a service for the county and the state to screen asylum seekers and refugees. And I've been able to incorporate the residents into those projects. And then in my budget, I've been able to build in some of the residency stipend for the time that they put in there, similar to the VA. Mm-hmm. A resident goes to the VA and some of their stipends covered for their time there. So kind of a similar concept. Sometimes you have to really beat the community, like, you know, beat the bushes, as they say, yeah. and try to find these experiences that are both educational mm-hmm. and useful to the agency.
Right.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, I think one of the other things I was interested in is clearly there's downsides to having no single stable funding source. But it also sounds like it, in some ways, searching for funding in unique places also provides the opportunity for unique educational opportunities. So I don't want to interrupt you going through the list, but I was curious yeah. about kind of what you think the benefits and drawbacks of the way you funded your residency are to the educational experience residents get.
Well, first I'd say the amount of time that I spent in my 30 years as program director just getting the money to pay for the program is ridiculous. And that it took away from my time to provide curriculum and education for the residents because so much time was given to this task and so much worry. Mm-hmm. Just the constant threat of not having funding and being worried you're not going to get your HRSA grant or that HRSA, yeah. which you've done in the past, would cut what they gave to you. And then what are you going to do? You've made a commitment to people and so on. That worry that other program directors and other specialties don't have, that is just a shame.
Yeah.
So I would say that's a huge downside to have to constantly worry about that. I guess the upside is that we're very close to our community, mm-hmm. our San Diego program, as many others are. And the fact that we work with our community to identify their needs and try to fill them has given the residents the opportunity to actually serve in leadership roles in these agencies. And certainly when COVID started and the county was had absolutely not enough staff to deal with it, our residents were able to step into leadership positions. So mm-hmm. I think that has its upside. You know, I don't think that other residencies, pediatrics and internal medicine, for example, were able to deploy residents into leadership, deploy residents to American Samoa to lead a Zika effort. So yeah. these are fabulous, fabulous opportunities, but the downside is the worry and the time. I did want to end my list of potential mm-hmm. sources of funding with one last thing, and that is grant funding. Mm-hmm. So it is possible to get your residents onto NIH grants, for example. Mm-hmm. Let's say a resident's going to do a project or an NIH diversity supplement where they're going to do a project and you can plan that ahead. I mean, there are restrictions to these, but over the years, we've had some really positive experience with residents working with researchers, grant funded. The grants would cover, you know, say half of their stipend. HRSA certainly, despite the fact that I said they were, you know, a strong core, they've never funded more than half of our needs. And currently they're only funding about a third of our needs. So having the ability to say, go to a researcher or I myself get a grant and I know that I need, you know, somebody to take on this aspect of the project, then having a resident do that has been amazing.
Mm-hmm. So I guess one of my last questions is, all this rolled up, I know HRSA estimates its costs give or take around $150,000 a year to fund a resident. And obviously, that's not entirely stipend, but that also includes a portion of the MPH tuition, a portion of the stipend and salary for the program director, the program coordinator, program faculty. Is that, do you find a realistic estimate of someone who's planning a program that they need to be setting aside about $150,000 per resident that they intend to have a slot for?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair number. If you, in my opinion, and as I've stated earlier, depending on the size of the program, you need, you know, probably a part of a faculty for every 2 to 3 residents, another 25% of a faculty, so that you have at least 100% of FTE faculty for, say, 10 residents, maybe more. All of the faculty have other jobs, other lives. There's very few faculty that are 100% just one person. And I think that brings strength to a program, allowing them to have, you know, one faculty who's in the community, say, and another who's, you know, a better epidemiologist and somebody else who's interested in lifestyle. That kind of diversity is really good for the program. So if you say out of that 150, you're covering the stipends, the benefits, the faculty, the program coordinator, I'd say at least that much, but that's probably where it's been, 150 for years and years. At UCSD, our residents are in a union, and it's at least $100K to cover their stipends and benefits, just that. And I wanted to say, I don't think we covered the MPH. You mentioned it at the top of the talk.
Yeah.
And the MPH is a real cost. I am in an amazingly charmed situation in that I'm co-sponsored by San Diego State University, who is a waived tuition for our residents. But I know that most programs are not in that situation and need to come up with the money for the MPH. So I'd probably add that to the 150 if they don't get that waived.
A lot of the funding sources will typically cover ones that will cover stipends or ones that will cover benefits, won't necessarily cover the MPH. In a lot of cases, you have to seek additional independent funding to cover that tuition, correct?
Correct. So you're either going after institutional funding or you're using perhaps the placement of residents into a clinical situation to cover the benefits and say HRSA or another agency to cover the stipend. Again, adding to the challenges of being a PD in this field.
So before we wrap up, I just wanted to ask if you have any other advice for a new program director or an incoming program director, whether that be about funding their program or just in your years of experience as a PD, what you've learned, what you'd like to share, what resources that you found really helpful.
My advice to incoming program directors is to stay close to ACPM, attend the annual meeting, get on the listserv, and then reach out to people on the listserv or others in your state or neighboring states who are doing the same thing and perhaps doing a site visit. It's something I was certainly very grateful for as a PD when I was attending the ACPM program director meeting. We've been able to do a lot of work together to look at how to implement milestones, how to implement competencies. We've talked about funding over the years. you know, certainly how to handle, you know, challenges in terms of a specific topic, and where do you get that kind of curriculum from? Where do you get that experience? So it's been really useful to share. And I've certainly also always been happy to talk to new PDs who are trying to implement programs and willing to have them come out. That's a standing offer, or to do a reverse site visit and sit down with a whiteboard and say, where do you think, what's your community like? What are your resources like? What's, have you been to GME? What are they saying? Who can you partner with?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for the time and for sharing the insight and experience, and a bit of the kind of secret sauce behind funding a program. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Dr. Hill.
Oh, my pleasure. Topic near and dear to my heart. Okay, you take care.